I'm trying to finish this Age of Empires match while we're recording.
So Age of Empires is your new shit then?
I mean, I've been playing Age of Empires since I was a kid, but Age of Empires 4, yeah, Justin and I have been playing the shit out of it. And currently, I am trying to micromanage 160 villagers. Because I'm trying to get this challenge for the Germans. So
as always,
it'll be done. I mean, it'll be done because I have 85 keeps around. So like, good luck. So at one point, once I finish this last keep, I'm literally just gonna play it in the background. And just, I got 12 minutes, and like they're gonna try to attack, and then they're just gonna get fucking D-dayed for 18.
No, we know how it goes. We know when I'll be talking, German so you'll stuff. Have like you'll have
another. Exactly. When you'll be talking, then you know I'm gonna tab that shit real fast.
The young old tab, baby. Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And on episode 1,217. This is going to be a very interesting one. We have the glorious return of new singles. We have several new singles to talk about. We have several albums to talk about. We have a new album from Amber Mark, Three Dimensions Deep. We have On to Better Things by Ian Dior, which we missed from the previous week, but we definitely want to get up to. And then we have Me Versus Me by NLE Choppa, to make an example. We have a lot of other news to go through. And yeah, I really want to start into the singles because similarly, because we are getting into the groove of things as we start Audio Face for this season, for this year, we have a couple singles that we missed from earlier this month. We have a lot of singles that came out this week that we really wanted to get to and acknowledge. So We have, I think, six we're going to go through, more or less. So let's jump right in it. First of all, we have veterans to the alternative rock game Muse with Won't Stand Down. And you know, Muse has had a very rocky kind of goings about since maybe their probably peak in 2007, 2008 with the Resistance Uprising, all that kind of song stuff coming out. You had some ups, you had some downs. Sean and I have had some disagreements about those ups and downs as well. But like, you'd still agree that they're ups and downs.
Oh, for sure.
But Won't Stand Down was a pleasant surprise, at least for me.
Won't Stand Down is the best thing that they've done in years, honestly. Like, they really knocked it out of the park with the way they did it. Like, the sound, everything. It's a return of form for them. After, like, you had Drones, which I didn't really like. You had the album 2018, something with, like, 80s Tron theme. I can't think of the title of it. But I thought was a step in the right direction. But still, like, there was some stuff missing to it for me. But with this, like, this is like quintessential Muse, but it's a nice little modernization of their sound and everything. So it's fantastic. Old Muse fans will like it, and new, more modern heads will like it as well. So it's great, and a great, great album teaser for it too. So
absolutely.
Really, really, really looking forward to seeing what they have, what exactly they're going to do. So
definitely. It's a slower track.
Yes.
But it definitely has that Muse energy. And some of the Muse things we haven't liked in a while are some of their experiments, right? When they reach too much into electronics,
Simulation
when
theory,
they reach too much.
Go.
Yeah,
that's their last album.
Yeah. And there are times when Muse, in fact, Muse has been very synthesizer heavy since the early 2000s for alternative rock, like perfectly fine. And they've been great at it. But some of these experiments haven't landed as well as we have liked them to. But that is totally different now, I'd say, at least from this first single. Again, we have the singles rule for a reason. We judge the first single from an album as it comes out, and then we listen to the full album with that single in the context before making like a broad proclamation about an artist or an artist's upcoming project. But 2022, another year of Muse, should be really, really great. I'm excited for that, among other things. Next, another really exciting thing, we have Dime in My Dryer by Brandon Boyd, who you may or may not know as the frontman for Incubus.
Yes, yep. Brandon Boyd, he's done some solo work before, but this is his first solo project in a very long time. And this is incredible. Moonlit trail of ease, waving off your back. A tide to quiet the noise. The dime in my dryer. Yes, you. I absolutely love Dime in My Dryer. Like, I really like that track. It's like quintessential Incubus, but with a little bit of a twist. The way there's kind of like more of a darker theme with it, and it's a little bit more alt-ish, I would say, compared to some of their rocky stuff, especially 8 that we reviewed, and their Trust Falls side B and A, which we both really, really liked. But yeah, it's a fantastic single. I'm really looking forward to the whole release of this album, which will be coming out this year. But old heads will like it. New heads will like it as well. It's just like Muse. Like, we are getting the anti-Coldplay right now, and I'm all for it. All for it.
Fun for the whole family, honestly. It was a really fun track. I like the sound effects that were played along with it. It was a really thoughtful production on that aspect, and it's just solid alternative rock. I'm not going to get my hopes up for this year, but I'm definitely making some calculations if we come up to our annual State of Music conversation.
Yeah,
that'll be coming up very soon, because this is interesting so far. And speaking of interesting so far, we have Toro and I. Tori Ma's back.
Tori Ma's back. Chaz himself. No shoes and socks on Mr. Rock Sandals is back, baby. With the fucking hit. Yeah, we got...
We have a double side. We have
post, and quintessential Chaz right here. Like, this is tried and true Tori Ma, but a little bit different compared to his latest work. I mean, we got a lot of demos and stuff in the last official work compared to last time, but I like this single. To see the context of the whole record, because it's a really, really bass heavy, which is interesting from Tori Ma, especially not as many synths and stuff as it is in some of his different work. But again, I'm all here for it. So I think this is the year of a lot of our favorite musicians coming back right now. So I love it.
Yeah, we are in one of those cycles, so to speak. And I'm definitely excited for it. We're doing a little bit of cheating here, but sometimes we'll allow ourselves to double dip, maybe not triple dip, but double dip. So we did listen to Postman and Magazine. I'll say Postman felt a little bit underwhelming. It felt like one of those experimental Tori Ma, Okay, Mr. Fuckboy kind of songs. We're just kind of messing around, experimenting. Magazine with, I want to say that's Salami Rose Joe Lewis. all right there. I'm just going to trust Spotify for the one time I ever do.
All right.
And... It came through, more on that later. It came through as a really interesting collaboration, and I would like to see some of that. Tori Ma doing some collaborating for his upcoming record, because it's very clear this man can do so much instrumentally on his own. I would love to see more and more collaborations. Not too collaborator heavy, not too light, but Tori Ma is one of those people I'd like to see experimentation.
He has gone on different people's records. He's done a lot of remixes. He's done some stuff with Neon Indian. He's done stuff with a bunch of different artists. And when he does, I think they're fantastic. So I'd love to see that for his record as well. Like Monte Carlo is my favorite on his last record that we reviewed 3 years ago, which is 2019 is 3 years ago. That's insane. That was his first official release. And it'll be interesting to see how his record comes out.
Definitely. Next, we have a really interesting pairing. We have Disclosure and Zed with You've Got to Let Go If You Want to Be Free. And that's basically the main mantra throughout the song as it goes through.
Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to hate this at first because I really don't like Zedd at all. As an EDM artist, he's just, you know, hypey-typey bullshit, as I like to call it. But actually, they pair each other decently in this track. I thought it was a really good mixture of the two. Like, it's perfect where you have that disclosure sound, but you still have a little bit of your quintessential drop and stuff of Zedd. But I thought it was a very good pairing, which I did not expect going in. I expected just to not like this at all. The secret that we're holding, you got to let go if you wanna be free. You got to let go if you wanna be free. And even before Dan put this in the rundown, I listened to it and I was like, all right, let's see what happens. And I go, okay, actually, surprisingly, don't hate this. So I'll allow it.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. I felt like it is a good opportunity for Disclosure to collaborate with more EDM contemporaries because they've done a good job with collaborating, of course, but they pick often very outside of what is ultimately their realm of electronic dance music. They're happy playing festivals, even though they are one of the few DJs to perform with actual instruments very often. They're very safely within EDM, and so I'm happy to see them perform with more contemporaries like Zedd. I think there's a Disclosure Zeus song as well, I want to say, that may have been done. I don't know, and I like, more collaborations like that. Oh, wait, no. Maybe it didn't happen?
I don't remember, but I thought there was one.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought there was one, but apparently there isn't. But, like, I know Disclosure has been starting to branch out and collaborate with more, you know, contemporary EDM artists. They've established themselves as, like, one in the top, and I want to see much more of that.
Agreed. Okay.
Next, we have Anxiety by Coyle Ray, and this was the song that kind of blew me away this week. It began kind of slow. It began kind of like, oh, it's sort of like iffy and generic with that like muffly thing it does. But it's a really solid trap and beat track that manages to get some like deep themes within it. Sometimes I feel like I can't trust no one around me. There's another side of me, but I don't even show it. Cause I got way too many people eating off me. Been through depression.
Just no one around me, cause I got anxiety. Yeah, I really like it. More on that later, but I think this is the year for me where I really dive into Trap and B. This is something that I think because of how many complaints we've had the past 2 years where it can get a little drowned out. Some of the themes could be great. Some of the themes could just be washed out and mellow. This is like a perfect, perfect track for it. It's like the themes, the lyricism, everything in there, the production, it's crisp, it's clean, it's gorgeous. So I really enjoy this track. This is my favorite singles we've done in a minute too, not just to indulge myself, but it's nice to have that little hit in there as well. So Coyle Ray knocked it out of the park. Do you know she's doing a record this year?
Possibly. Coyle Ray is just generally really active, and as young artists tend to be, I wouldn't be surprised if we see one or two projects this year, maybe a drop here, maybe like an album later in the year, or reversed. But I would be definitely excited for that. And lastly, because we've been covering The Smile a lot on Audio Face, there was another new single that was released, The Smoke. It's the band with Johnny Greenwood and Tom York and a bunch of others.
And Tom Skinner.
Tom Skinner, naturally, but we don't care. Because while we have been indulging ourselves.
We are The Smile. Not The Smile as in, but The Smile is as in the guy that lies and cheats to you. That is how Tom York introduced the band.
Yes.
Tell me they never, and I fucking love it. Also, they did do some live shows this weekend. Did not watch, actually, because I am trying to be true to this podcast, and I want to have a full listen. I've been holding off. The only thing I did listen to is the Glastonbury Festival thing, but that was like in June. So I've been waiting. I'm actually going to do it. I'm trying.
It is cool to see that they're warming
up. It's like you have a heroin addiction. You're just like scratching your arm all the time and going up and you're like, I need that stuff. That's me right now. I'm trying so hard. I'm trying to mute my Radiohead shit and it's impossible. But we're doing it for this podcast. Damn it.
The smile is like one of the any number of drugs in Euphoria for Sean. It's just, he's got to get that fixed. He's trying really, really hard, but can't do it. Anyways, that was new singles. We love doing this. And also what we love doing is promoting newer artists, up and coming artists and their work. So if you have one of those things, email us at our email address, audioface@syndicate23.co. That's audioface@syndicate23.co. We will take a look at your music. We are actively checking that inbox now, fairly actively. And we will, you know, and we will get to your single suggestion and we'll promote it. Singles rule still applies, of course, but we really want to make sure we are getting a as broad a range as possible of artists to review. And we're doing a lot of things this year to do that. Really, 2022 is the year of really leveling up Audioface in terms of how much we influence the music industry, both the number of reviews that we do and the kind of artists that we influence. And that will help to help us do that will be a lot of support from the audience. So definitely help us doing that. And also the Audioface Awards 2021, I'm publishing all of those clips. It's hard to do at scale because it was a hell of an episode, but the whole thing is up at for Syndicate 23 members. You can help support Audioface and all the other shows that we do at syndicate23.co. Again, and all the transition stuff has gone really well. We're on the new podcasting platform, but that doesn't matter for anyone else because everyone's still getting all the episodes. So that's all cool. That's all awesome. The 2022 playlist, we usually do a playlist for all of our favorite music of the year. The 2022 playlist is going to be ready. We're going to start promoting that very shortly. So stay tuned for that. And thank you, Peter. I forgot to thank Peter in the Audioface episode last week. Thank you, Peter, for mastering all of the episodes for Audioface and Power Report on Syndicate 23. We really appreciate it. Helps it sound really nice and good. Follow them at DeadMusic666 on Instagram. And Dead Music Productions, they do mastering for artists. So if you are into that kind of thing, you know any artists who are looking for that kind of project, check them out there. Anyways, we go into the top news this week, and this is a juicy music news week. Not for our usual sort of like scandalous kind of things, but as always, Audioface is a show about morals. So let's jump into the big music story. Joni Mitchell has joined Neil Young, and Neil Young was really kind of leading the way in this, in pulling their music off of Spotify over Spotify's continued support financially and hosting on their platform exclusively of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, which has become, over the COVID-19 pandemic, a major source of misinformation about the pandemic. Joe Rogan often invites different alternative scientists and doctors, quote unquote. And while I do a political podcast, I'll invite people who go against the status quo on things all the time, and I'll challenge them on these things. But Joe Rogan does this in a way that's very sort of embracing the nonsense and not really challenging some of these things when a lot of major science and more reputable forms of information are constantly challenging him. And so because of this, you've had tangible results. There's a lot of COVID-19 misinformation has become wrapped around this idea of rights and justice, and people think that this is the big scam that's going on. And as usual, people are looking to this the pandemic as a example of government overreach, when government overreach is all around us. If we actually like don't lose the plot here, we can actually focus on the major things that are going on in the world. #NoPolitics. But getting back to the music aspect of it, Neil Young, reading from TechCrunch, announced that he would pull his music from the streaming service to protest Spotify's relationship with Joe Rogan. And basically, Neil Young put forth an ultimatum. Yes, saying that if you don't pull Joe Rogan or, you know, censure him or, you know, at all punish him under Spotify's supposed COVID misinformation policy, which they'll point to and say they've taken down podcasts for spreading down COVID misinformation. If they don't do anything about Joe Rogan's podcast, then Neil Young is pulling his music off of Spotify. And so Spotify said again that they, you know, apply their supposed policy against COVID-19 misinformation. That being said, they didn't say this in the statement, but Joe Rogan has a special deal, $100 million special deal. And the thing behind that is, by having Joe Rogan's podcast exclusively on Spotify, like the YouTube clips or whatever, exclusively on Spotify, that is allowing Spotify to become not only a dominant player in the music streaming space, but also the podcast streaming space. Yeah. And so,
and also like the advertisers for JRE as well, like they have to pay a certain amount of money to Spotify just to advertise on JRE's platform too. So there's a lot of money involved, a lot of money.
Yeah, Spotify is now running tolls on the bridge that is the Joe Rogan podcast because they have that intellectual property under their belt. And they are having other advertisers use that same platform that Spotify then generates extra money off of in order to, you know, grow their platform. And so Spotify is directly benefiting from this business decision. And Neil Young is right on the money here. Other artists are right on the money here. And there's been a rise in artists not only talking about Spotify's unfair business practices as far as compensating artists, but also the investments that major board members make into supposed like defense contractors and other things that make artists concerned about where their efforts, where their labor is ultimately going towards for the sake of convenience for music streamers like ourselves, like many of the people who listen to this podcast. And so I think it's an incredible stance that they're taking. And it's difficult because, like we said, for the sake of convenience, there are a lot of people. Spotify is the largest music streaming service. Apple Music is still a distant second. And so it makes it that much more difficult for people to listen to artists that they like, because that means Neil Young can't be in all of your playlists or that are on Spotify. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's more and more people are starting to do it, more bands, more things and stuff. So I think it's the beginning of that. It'd be interesting to see if anything actually takes effect, if Spotify does anything. I doubt it. It's absurdly doubt it. But yeah, if you're going to live your, if you talk your politics, got to live your politics at the end of the day.
100%. So I'm proud of them for doing that.
Lobsters.
Yeah.
Climate doesn't exist.
I've stopped IDWing my brain.
Man. I love it. Oh, I fucking love it. Eat that shit up. Speaking of eating shit up.
Yeah, we move on to
the wheel.
We move on to the Dan on the hot seat corner here.
Dan is round four. No, I'm joking.
So, Taylor Swift, a notable pop musician, has sold a lot of records. And Damon Albarn, a notably older British pop musician, has also sold a lot of records under a number of different names and projects, got into a little bit of a beef. And it's not a great listen here. I'll put all my cards on the table here very early on. I am a huge Gorillaz fan. I have talked about it on the 200-something episodes of this podcast before. We did a Gorillaz special. We've talked about how, you know, Taylor Swift's poppiness is not necessarily our thing, but we've also warmed up to some of Taylor Swift's later albums and her stances as a musician on both reclaiming her work as an artist and standing up for artists being able to make money off of their own work, not just herself but other artists as well. And I've also like had conversations with Taylor Swift fans and much the same way I have conversations with other fans of other musicians, and I've started to kind of see the Swifty side of things. And why I can't say like I'm that much of a fan in that way, I can sort of see that. It was very easy for me to tell that even though I'm a Gorillaz fan, I can see the appeal, and it's easy for me to tell that even though I'm predisposed to a lot of Damon Albarn things, being a Gorillaz fan, liking Blur, etc. Immediately when this happened, I was just like, Damon Albarn, you're a fucking idiot. What are you doing?
So, right, Damon, shut up.
What had happened?
Your iPad, Damon.
What had happened was Damon is doing a press tour for a couple of live shows that he's doing in America for his more recent album, The Nearer the Fountain, The More Pure the Stream Flows, that we reviewed and we were sort of largely unimpressed with last year. And at one point he says, quote, "It's actually quite hard doing a whole concert on piano. You can't hide anything. You learn whether the songs are any good or whether they were popular at the time because of the sound and the attitude. It's a day of reckoning, to be honest, that not much music, modern music, can withstand." I think that's ultimately fair. That's, I think, can be said about a lot of concerts, most musicians performing live. I think that is when you're testing your music, your ability to perform your songs live and recreate them. And we talked about that's what really separates a good musician from a great musician is how they sound away from the studio. But when the interviewer, Michael Wood from the Los Angeles Times, pointed out that Swift's songwriting, for example, Taylor Swift's songwriting is good enough to be stripped down as an instrumentation. Albarn snapped back, "She doesn't write her own songs." saying that, basically going on this thing saying co-writing doesn't count. I know what co-writing is. Co-writing is very different to writing. I'm not hating on anybody. I'm just saying it's a big difference between a songwriter and a songwriter who co-writes. Doesn't mean the outcome can't be really great. I suppose I'm just a traditionalist in that sense.
Yeah, Damon, you're on, son.
Yeah. So never mind the sort of like difference between, you're both trying to say, Damon, that there is no distinction, or, you know, it's no disrespect for co-writing. That being said, co-writing is different from writing. And like, you're ultimately making a point that Taylor Swift doesn't write her own songs. She only co-writes them. So even putting only there is different. When in reality, if you are adjacent to the music industry at all, you understand that songwriting is a complicated process. And sometimes co-writers, like, for example, Sean and I are co-hosts. There is, like, we could both be hosts of Audio Phase. We could both be co-hosts of Audio Phase. When it comes to the show that you see, there's a pretty much like an equal amount of like work in that. So,
I mean, look at Radiohead's songs. Technically, like, it's not Tom York's song. It's not Jenna Greenwood's song. It's a collective effort. It's all these things. Like, you work with producers, work with other things, and they might just flip two words, and technically you're a co-writer. You might just do two stanzas, and then you're a co-writer. So there's a lot of variables within it too.
Yeah, it's very nebulous.
It's not
nebulous,
just like,
term.
You know, your Ariana Grande, who definitely gets help writing. Like, those types of pop artists, your ones that we like to clown on, are the ones that they don't really write their own music that much. They might do it here or there, but they have the help from giant media conglomerates and from the record industry as well, because they want to pump out more and more records. But Taylor definitely actually really writes her own stuff. So,
yeah, you like it or not, Taylor writes her own music. And also, like,
and like, she put it on Twitter. I'll read her quote after she saw the stuff from Damon. She said, "At Damon Albarn, I was such a big fan of yours until I saw this. I write all of my own songs. Your hot take is completely false and so damaging. You don't have to like my songs, but it's really fucked up to try and discredit my writing. Wow."
Yeah. She added, "P.S. I wrote this tweet all by myself, in case you were wondering," which highlights, like, it highlights how incredibly condescending. It highlights how incredibly condescending that Damon Albarn's like comments were. And I want to do my sort of like partial defense of Damon Albarn here, in that you don't have to look at Damon Albarn's actions. Like, look at the Gorillaz project. Look at all the different projects he's done. He's made it an effort to collaborate with and highlight and put on a pedestal, even more so than himself, a number of different artists, a wide range of artists, like hundreds of artists, literally, across all continents, across many different languages, men, women, gender non-conforming people, all age groups. Like, the project is, that's why I think, like, the Gorillaz project is such a great representation of modern popular music, because it's so varied and so global in that way. And so Damon should know what co-writing looks like. There are a lot of songs that are like, okay, sure, maybe Damon co-wrote it, but like with Désolé, like Fatoumata Diawara, like, she takes over that song and it's in another language. Damon Albarn speaking broken ass French that makes no sense. Did he co-write that song? Is he less of an artist? Like, what? It's a ridiculous distinction. And so Albarn, sort of sensing that the Swifties were coming in the distance like a slow roll, started to apologize and saying on Twitter, "I totally agree with you. I had a conversation about songwriting that, and sadly, it was reduced to clickbait. I apologize unreservedly and unconditionally. The last thing I want to do is discredit your songwriting. I hope you understand." Damon Albarn, I'm nominating you for the Noted Little Bitch Award.
Damn.
I never thought I would say those words. But you just got quoted, dog.
You just got caught on 4K. Like, you should be wearing that sweatshirt right now, Dan. Like, that is, damn.
But I don't, like, you were just quoted in an article, man. Like, yeah. That's it. If you're trying to, I mean, you didn't quit Twitter, so it's not like an automatic Noted Little Bitch nomination.
It's not like the Matty Healy, yeah.
Yeah, but, and facing the raft of Taylor Swift fans, I understand if you would quit Twitter under that. But that being said, Damon Albarn doesn't really use Twitter much. In fact, ironically enough, I think he quote-unquote co-writes his own tweets, as in, like, doesn't use his own Twitter. So there's that. I'll just leave that there. But the whole hiding behind how you were quoted in the newspaper. Like, the LA Times article is up to be seen. And I'm trying not to even speak for my bias of, like, being a journalist and knowing journalists. But oftentimes when musicians say things and they get pushback from the journalist in the article, but they're totally fine with it because the context is just the journalist and the artist in the room with a couple of people on either side, then it actually gets read by more people. And what other people call cancel culture, we just call a reaction to your speech. Other people using their same free speech, all right? And so people use their free speech and said Damon Albarn's decisions are dumb. Gorillaz fans, myself included, said Damon Albarn's comments are dumb. And rather than Damon Albarn taking fuller responsibility, he said that, my comments were reduced to clickbait. It was a very lightly edited transcript of the interview, dude. So I would go harder on Damon Albarn, but he has a 25-year track record of actually working with other musicians. So maybe this can be resolved in Song Machine 2 to appear on Netflix, maybe or maybe not. And Taylor Swift and 2D can do a wonderful ballad. And maybe, much like the Feel Good Inc. Madonna crossover, Taylor Swift can just take over the whole thing and overshadow the band.
I'm down.
Not bitter about that at all. But yeah, way to...
Damn.
I really don't want Damon Albarn to like end up being an uncle rocker, which he like borders on doing all the time. But
his solo work definitely did. But the last Gorillaz album I liked a lot. So there's that. Yeah. You got to figure out, you got to evolve and change in that way. So
definitely.
Compared to Thom Yorke, where he's like, I love Billie Eilish. She's doing her own fucking thing. Like, doesn't like belittle anybody, I guess, in that way. So, but
so that was the funniest part that I didn't mention about this is that Damon Albarn comments on Billie Eilish, saying that, like, in contrast to Taylor Swift, Billie Eilish is an incredible songwriter, and literally mentions the fact that, Billie Eilish and her brother,
let's say, literally, as though, like, brother, record scratch, like, they co-write everything. Like, you realize how much Phineas works on her albums and stuff, right? He made complete songs for her to do.
You know, he was misquoted.
Not belittling her at all, because we know how much we fucking love her records, both of them. And Phineas' solo work as well.
We're not the ones saying co-writing is any less of a form of writing. And yeah, that's a great example where, like, Phineas has his own ass career and Billie Eilish has her own ass career. But the fact that Damon Albarn very clearly understands that, because that was the comparison he made in the direct sentence that, you know, was a clickbait misquote of his transcript, that, like, further cements
parody
him
in
as,
Minecraft.
That further cements him as, like, one of the first noted little bitch nominations of this season of Audio
That's
Face,
a
which
solid
is,
NLB right there, too.
This is going to be a very interesting year of this award so far. Anyways, let's move on to the first album, proper album. What is an album? That's going to be on the awards. This will be on that later. But I'm sorry, that's going to be on the State of the Music conversation, because mixtape versus
album.
Mixtape versus album. We need to settle this again.
Yeah, we really do.
But later. Anyways. Next album, we have Amber Mark's Three Dimensions Deep. It's 17 songs, an hour long. And Amber Mark is very interesting. She has this history of kind of indie, R&B, neopop kind of music, kind of spacey out there. So usually a little bit, I wouldn't say spiritual in nature, but definitely a little bit slower to be said, but still usually has a little bit of energy. There's the, I guess you could call it an EP or whatever, but 3:33 AM that came out in 2017 that I really liked, had a really nice indie vibe to it. Three Dimensions Deep, it's one of those things where, okay, if you're pushing an hour long of an album, I really kind of want to question why exactly, like, what are you doing to justify that? And you get some really great songs here and there, but I feel like you get a lot of filler as well.
I would say the first about 10 tracks of this album are fantastic. I really, really liked it from 1 to 10. I absolutely loved it. After that, that's when it started to get a little long for me. And at that point, it was like, okay, again, what is... There are a lot of different sounds in here that I do like. And it's actually, for a long project and for having so many different sounds, actually it's quite cohesive, which is good. Like, you have some trap and beat, you have some try and pull... neopop, you have indie, you have a little bit of funk, you have tried and true pop, you have a lot of different themes, a lot of different sounds or production styles in this record, but they all end up being cohesive. You have some parts where she's rapping, you have some parts where she's doing spoken word, parts where she's singing her butt off in songs, and there's a lot in here. But one thing that I like, again, it's very cohesive. Everything flows very well. Each song kind of goes together in that way. But towards the about around song 10, about On and On and Out of This World, that's to me where I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'm close to how many songs are left. I was like, holy shit, there's still quite a few tracks on here. And that's where I could feel where it was starting to get lost, is that part where it felt pretty long in that regard. But that's not to say that there are incredible tracks in here. I really like the opening track of One. Kind of sets off that right foot again. You have that like really nice like hip like mix between hip hop and neo pop, and that way the beat is. She does some spoken word in there. She does some different vocals, and it's like a perfect little opening track for it. What it is going into it, you get more of that like slower, almost like indie-ish style, with where you combine an indie sound with a pop sound. I really, really, really like it. So again, there's a lot of good tracks in here. But again, it goes for a while. And that's, I guess, my biggest complaint. If she had cut a couple tracks, I think this would have been like an absolutely incredible record, but it just got drowned out because I've listened to this album actually 3 times because I really enjoyed it, but it took me a while to figure out what I liked. I had to sift through a lot of it because there's just a ton of music in there, to see. So, yeah, if you do an hour-long record, it needs to really hold on. And I think the issue with this, too, is, and this is something I want to bring up in the state of music industry. If you make a long record, you know, which some of my favorite bands do, LCD Sound System, Radiohead, Sigaros, so on and so forth, right? They make long as fuck records. But they're only 10 songs, 11 songs, because some of those songs are 5-6 minutes long or 7 minutes long. Depending on that. And sometimes you can do that with that, so then you don't get lost within a different track. Sometimes in here, at the beginning of it, she does it very fantastic. One, what it is, most men, 3.5, 5.5, 4, 15. Those are great lengths for that. And then you get a string of under 3 minutes. You get 240, 230, 250, 350, 233. And those are the tracks to me where I like them, like FOMO, 350, fantastic track, probably my favorite on the record.
My favorite's there. Bubbles, was there, not to cut you off, but like on that like stream, Bubbles. I like some of these strong, yeah. Sort of ones too. Yeah, I feel all right. Oh no, don't you waste my time. Skip the shot, put the line right back to the bubbles every night. Yeah, I feel all right.
Exactly. I love the shorter ones, but the issue is you had so many short songs, you had so much things that towards the bottom of it, you get those 3.5, 3.5, 4, 18, 3.5, 2, and then 3, and then 4 to end it. With that, it's just there's so much there that I get lost on certain tracks where I have to go back and figure it out. So I think that's something that needs to be said in that regard. If you make a long record, I like it to be 12. 13 songs max, usually about that. It's the same exact issue I had with Notes on a Conditional Form. I'm a big The 1975 fan. Fucking love them. One of my favorite bands. But the same thing with Notes. I'm still struggling to figure out exactly what tracks I really like on that album. I'll go back and listen to it. I'm like, man, there's a lot of stuff I missed in this record because of how much there is. And it's something that I had on this record too, but not to say that there aren't great things, because there are fantastic things. There, Bubbles is another amazing track as well. But anyways, I said my piece.
Yeah, I'll also say that to its detriment of maybe not making some decisions to rearrange some songs, cut some songs, and move those to like a drop or an EP, mm-hmm. you lose the fact that there are some parts of the latter half of the album that really hit. I think Dark Side's a really good one that almost does like her take on, or like Amber Mark's take on like a future nostalgia, this thing that's happening in pop where you're getting a lot of 80s sounds to it. I think that her take on it is actually very, very good. And
I love the way the drums are in that song too. I remember listening to that because that's like the way it is. It sounds industrial, but like 80s industrial. It's a very good spin on it. But yeah, as you said, you're not going to like, that's one of the things where like my third listen through, I got to that track and I was like, oh shit, I forgot this was in here. And that's one of those things where like you need to play stuff like that or figure out what you can cut or what you can move into an EP, because we don't necessarily want you just to never release the tracks. Both in the context of a record, there's a lot of things in here that you might want to get out that we're going to miss.
And there's some production stuff, like you were saying, that hits here. Like you have experimentation going into different parts of EDM. It's a little bit drilly here. Yeah, this 80s kind of throwback. It's really good. Let all of that stuff sing. Let us come from that album and go. She did that. She did every single one of those different alterations on the sound and executed them well. I would love to see that here. I think there was just a lot that distracted from the point. Not to say that that wasn't executed well, because I think it was executed pretty decently, but there's too much distraction from the point for me to really say like, wow, this is really good. But that's not to say that it's definitely not going to come out of her. She keeps hitting at this with future records and really refining and condensing what her sound ends up being. Then I think she's got nothing but like more awards and recognition coming her way.
Yeah, and I think, kind of alluding to what I said earlier in the podcast, this is the, I won't necessarily call it trap and beat, but some of the trap and beat tracks in here, this is what I want from artists who are in that like trap and beat pop-ish category to do, is experiment, do something fucking different, as we always say on this podcast, because this is a very unique record in the way everything is produced. Because you get some of those poppy tracks that we've heard a ton, but they're shorter and it's not the entire record, so they like, you actually get to enjoy it because you're not going to hear that track 55 times done. You might hear it twice in this record and they really hit different because they might be spaced in between two completely different sounding tracks. And within that, there's so much more experimentation. There's a lot of different things done that you don't get to hear all the time. Example like Dark Side, it's a fantastic track. FOMO, fantastic track. Bubbles, Most Men, so on and so forth. And those ones are really, they stand out in that way because they're very unique and different. But you just, there needs to be some editing done in there to get more of the point across in that way. But I really like the effort. I think she did a great record. That being said, and I want more and more artists to experiment with all the different tools that they have at their disposal. And this is how like you should do it. Just edit a little bit more. As Amadeus, just too many notes. Just cut a few and it'll be fine.
I want to summarize and end here with something I want to do more often, which is include listener opinions of artists when they send them as well. So one listener, All Your Face Kyle, who's been really great at getting us some singles and other albums to listen to and make sure we're staying on top of the new things this year, really puts it well, saying the Amber Mark album's decent. It's a bit more of a pop generic version of her older indie sound, kind of like what I was saying with 3:33 a.m. Continuing with 17 tracks and 60 minutes of material, this is very long for a sophomore R&B project. There's a few standout tracks like Bubbles, FOMO, Worth It, but vocals are shining on most of these tracks, and most of them are really well composed. But I wish she took a more critical license to go for a more focused project. And I couldn't agree more with that.
Yep. But it's a great, great effort, and I want more and more of this to be done. And Dan, take it away.
Okay, the arbitrary scale this week. This is the arbitrary scale that makes me the Joker. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because rating systems for albums are ridiculous and they remove from like what albums can really be. That being said, there in the world of dumb bullshit NFTs, there's a George Floyd NFT. They're being called Floydies. And so... no NFT is good, but we're going to award any NFT that we want to with any album. I'm just going to say that the Cop George Floyd one is disqualified. I'm going to like go on a tangent if any. If
no way. Did they actually make... Oh my God, I hate white people, man. Jesus.
You said it so I don't have to. Anyways, what are we going to get? Well, I'm going to give this the Frankenstein George Floyd. Not because it's like too many things put together, but more like we need a little bit more refinement, you know? Like maybe if we did like a 2.0 here. That would be... This is fucking terrible.
Just I'm looking at some of these and I'm just like the ignorance is real. This is Floydies in space. This is astronaut NFT. I hate this already, but you make your bed, you gotta sleep in it too.
This is a great time for an ad block. Help grow AudioFace by following us on Twitter or Instagram at AudioFacePod. Subscribe to AudioFace so you don't miss any of the stuff that we are putting out at youtube.com/AudioFacePod. Rate us on Apple Podcasts. We haven't gotten reviews on Apple Podcasts lately, so I'm calling y'all out who have iPhones out there, and we love you all very much, you blue bubble bastards. Give us reviews on Apple Podcasts so that you can help us grow. Check out the recent Power Report episode. I went in on Chuck Schumer. I went in on Joe Biden on the things they promised through their campaign, they got elected on, that they haven't delivered on, and that time is basically out on them to deliver for. So I kind of posit, why do Democrats get in this cycle where they continually lose power and are constantly on the brink of chaos, and that becomes their political message, that you have to help us get from the brink or like the edge of darkness, more or less? It's not only because Republicans are agents of chaos, it's because Democrats are agents of not doing anything. But we break it down. I have video, audio evidence of Chuck Schumer saying a lot of these things. So check that out in the latest Power Report at youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet. And yeah, of course, you can support all these things by going to syndicate23.co. We really appreciate it. Moving on the not getting clipped out for YouTube segment, Tucker Carlson is sending a camera crew on tour with Kid Rock. The same camera crew that did the Kyle Rittenhouse documentary, by the way.
Oh, Christ.
So,
I don't talk about this.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson Originals sends a shiver down
the spine. Is it like the Disney Plus sign where it goes, dun, dun.
Yes. With little like sparkles by Originals.
Yeah. Good.
So Carlson's documentary crew, Reading from Consequence of Sound, is joining Kid Rock on his 2022 Bad Reputation Tour, which kicks off in March. Vaccine mandates be damned. And that's a major part of the thing, is that Kid Rock refuses to play at venues that require vaccine mandates. And so he is just going to...
All right, Florida and Texas it is.
Yeah. Talk about the Chitlin' Circuit. No, Carlson went on to praise Kid Rock's recent conservative stroking singles like Don't Tell Me How to Live, which came out last year, which was just so ridiculous.
This is awful.
Earlier this week, Kid Rock had a new single. Oh, we forgot one for new singles, Sean. How do we forget the new Kid Rock single? It's a real lapse on our part.
No.
It's called We the People, and it dismisses the Black Lives Matter movement, Dr. Of Fauci, course. And encourages naysayers to suck on D's nuts. You know, Kid Rock and Weezer should collaborate to lyrically co-write and improve each other's songs, because they are just in rare form right now. Meanwhile,
Kanye... Sweetest taboo, you are in rare form.
Meanwhile, Kanye West is apparently on the do not fly list for Australia until he gets fully vaccinated, or at least two doses of the vaccine, or maybe one of the J&J. You know how that goes. But actually, no, Australia requires two shots for entry into the country, so it would have to be, you know, that full vaccination.
I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah. So this happened recently with... this happened with a athlete, Novak Djokovic or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah, the tennis player. Yep.
Yeah, he was kicked out of the Australian Open because, yeah, he refused to get vaccinated. And Kanye, on the most recent Drink Champs episode, said he's half-sinated, so he's only had one vaccine. So he's going to have to get that double vaccine in order to be able to perform in Australia. I'm not even going to talk about the Donda 2 rumors, because if you actually believe that's coming out, y'all are Sims. Speaking of moving on to better things, let's go on to better things with album On to Better Things by Album Dior. On to Better Things by Ian Dior, sorry. Yes, 15 songs, 36 minutes long. So very different in as far as like what we review on this podcast so far and length of time. Mm-hmm. This is that burgeoning sort of emo rap category that comes out of SoundCloud rap from a while ago. You got a little bit of it from, like, I guess XXXTentacion to some extent, but also like a little bit of it from Juice WRLD. It has a lot of mainstream appeal and popularity for a large amount of reason. There's like massive views on this shit because you have appearances with Travis Barker, Lil Uzi Vert, and Machine Gun Kelly. All for what I think is like a pretty, for what it's trying to do, a decent effort. It could have like overstayed its welcome by being double the length, and it didn't do that. And what you get here is variety and trap, which you very much don't get very often because you are getting songs that just like break out into rock at certain points, which are very interesting, really breaking into that emo punk kind of aesthetic into it. And there are even some interlude tracks in here, which I thought were pretty good and like pretty like workable as tracks to begin with, since you have a shorter project. So I was all pleasantly surprised with this. Not perfect, but pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I thought it was decent. There are some things in here that I think it's just, that's the nature of the record, where it's just too Juice WRLD-y, too XXXTentacion and all that stuff, where it's just okay. It's not like, example, the opening track, Is It You? That is like the quintessential like emo SoundCloud rapper sound. Like you hear that and you're like, all right, I know what this is going to be. But there's actually some decent tracks in here. Like I actually don't mind V12 featuring Skull Diamond himself. Let them butterfly doors when I get you, She said I'm reckless. Diamonds in my smile and my necklace. Don't forget that I'm the one who did it first. Put you in some Prada, I'ma hit her with that V12 stroke, Ha, ha. Don't forget who did this shit first, I'ma be this way to in a hearse, And I don't care if your own feelings hurt, Cause I know I'm the one that did it first. Ripped Skull Diamond, re-implanted Skull Diamond himself. What if he gets a Skull Tanzanite instead? I might actually respect Lil Uzi Vert if he gets a Skull Tanzanite. I might be like, all right, you're kind of cool for that. But a Skull Diamond, I don't know.
Diamonds are forever.
He went to Jared. Anyways.
Yeah, I think on that V12, I think is a really good pairing for both Uzi and Ian Dior's kind of emo trap
in a long time.
Yeah, thanks. I think it works out really well. And both of them have the potential to be kind of whiny or, you know, kind of overbearing. Doesn't really happen here. I think it's one of those situations we've talked about, like with Kid C Ghost, Kid Cudi, and Ye. They pair each other back enough to sound really solid together.
I think some of these are really like the way they complement each other, like even obvious with Travis Barker. I thought they complement each other very well. Even thought it was with Machine Gun Kelly and Travis Barker. I thought they all actually sounded pretty good on it, even though the track was pretty short with it. Thought that was okay. I mean, this, I don't want to judge it based on my preconceived notions of this, of the genre, and my own personal tastes of the genre, where I don't really like it. I think it can get boring and very overpopulated within the into the music sphere. But I think this is a good effort on that, especially with the features, because normally with a lot of star features like this, I think they could outshine usually the artist who does it. But I think Ian Dior actually sounds pretty good with the features. They complement, all of them complement each other well, and they fit the theme and the tone of the record as well. They don't pull too heavy, they don't pull too much on it, which is good. And that's actually been a theme so far this year, at least the first month of this year, where features on a record other than Don FM have actually been pretty good. Don FM is probably the only one where the features I don't like, and I think they actually shouldn't have been there on an otherwise perfect album. But I think this is, it's a decent effort. It might get me more and more into this genre because it's something that I'm trying to get into, as it's very popular, obviously. But I think it's a good record, actually. I was pleasantly surprised.
I was actually surprised.
There are still some things I have issues with, I guess, of just the way the production is on it, where it can sound a little cheap in a way, but I think that's just the genre in general, where I think that's just what you get. So I'm not going to judge it that, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be fair, Sean. Honorable Chairman Sean.
I think that's fair. Like, I'll take the Dark Angel interlude, for example. I think it's sort of simple, and it's an interlude song, so it's kind of weird to, like, put our targets on this, right? So, of course, it's going to be kind of simple in its construction, but a lot of songs kind of follow this. That being said, it's one of the interludes that I really found that I enjoyed, because it, you know, is sort of not understated, but sits very well within what it does. I know it's not smart, and now it's bad enough that I'm a punk with a twisted brain. I'll die a rock star like Marilyn Monroe. I'm feeling like it serves its purpose very well. It fits a mood really nicely. It keeps this emo sort of deep, dark mood that you can sort of vibe to depressingly with, and allows you to go through different songs. Like, Obvious, which breaks out into a full rock ballad kind of thing. Like, that's kind of was a wild thing at first to put into the album, and it kind of seems out of place. There's a bunch of other Travis Barker appearances through this. This is emo rap anyway, so it actually isn't that out of place. And this is the kind of stuff that maybe 5 years ago, a more naive version of me would have been like, yeah, more of this in music. I now sort of know that, like, this exact mixing doesn't really pair as well as I thought it would. But this is Audioface. We'll always give you credit for trying something different.
Yeah, I mean, we always do that. So I think this is a decent record. But moving on, our arbitrary scale this week, I'll let Dan say this one.
God. Our arbitrary scale is the This Actually Exists, George Floyd NFTs, aka the Floydies. And I'm going to give this like tuxedo crown. Not the clown, but like the crown NFT.
Okay, yeah.
Oh God, there's literally a tweet that I'm gonna like save here because I'm masochistic, that says Martin Luther King was cool and all, but MLK's death had nowhere near the worldwide significance that George Floyd's death had. This is why on this MLK day we celebrate George Floyd through NFTs. Moving on. Okay.
I'm not even going to give it. I don't care. Whatever. Just give it one. Moving on to this is, all right, before we get started on the story, this is when you're playing Uno. You throw Uno reverse card. They throw it back to you. You throw another Uno reverse card and they say, hey, look, here's coming to you, kid. Throws it back at you. And you're like, you know what? Here's coming back to you. And you throw another Uno reverse card and everybody leaves the table because you played like 8 reverse cards in a row and it somehow happened.
So unimpromptu advertisement, but for my birthday, I've decided I give up on everything. I just want to have like a really chill card game night. I bought this.
Good man.
Uno All Wild.
All Wild? What the hell?
Basically, all of the cards are like the fuck you cards. This is like, of
Yo,
course.
Oh, yes. Course,
if it's going to be more. Like my birthday party, it's going to be something where like fights break out. So like.
I'm going to flip that table. Like, we're going to pull knives. It's going to be, oh man. I'm going to have to come heavy to your house.
you know, it's a good Dan party when the LA County Sheriffs get called. Which gang? Anyways, so also this is a perfect time to mention we have an ongoing inside joke on the podcast that's called Free Slim Jimmy, because we noted that after Ray Shremmerd, which was a really major pop trap act, like Migos big for a minute, Sway Lee had his own sort of career that has now fizzled out, but Slim Jimmy had nothing and fizzled
Slim
out.
Slim Jimmy was just fizzled out, and we're like, where's Slim Jimmy at? Free Slim Jimmy.
Yeah.
Well,
Well, for a minute there, we're like, no, unfree Slim Jimmy, arrest Slim Jimmy, because Slim Jimmy was arrested for domestic violence. According to Miami-Dade County Corrections and Rehabilitation inmate records obtained by XXL, he was booked, and basically the incident report claimed that she tried to move their son from the playpen to a bed when Jimmy reportedly grabbed her hair with such force that her hair extension ripped from her scalp.
Damn, so, I didn't know we were still scalping people's.
Anyways, so after that, she wrote on Instagram afterwards, "Dade County, y'all are wrong for this," in kind of a twist of events. "I told you guys he did not hit me. Every officer you guys had in my face are wrong for this. No hands were put on anybody. I stated it more than once. It was a loud argument and the police were called. You guys turned nothing into something. It's our son's first birthday tomorrow. What's wrong with y'all?" And so you have the Slim Jimmy mugshot, which means by definition he is nominated for the Audio Face from Dusk to Dawn Mugshot Award for 2022.
100%.
But, I mean, you have this sort of weird he said, she said situation, but he and she are saying the same thing. It's just the cops that are on the wrong side. And so, it's the weird
all
one.
All I'm saying is, Slim Jimmy, that is your right to die right there. That is your that is your woman forever. You cannot get rid of it. You cannot divorce her, nothing, whatever that is.
No breakups, that, no prenups. No,
breakups,
that's all.
Nothing, no prenup. That's it. You don't even prenup. Now, I'm not even allowing you a prenup. You got to just stick it out. When y'all are like 75 and shit and you're over there with 85 face tattoos that all look wrinkly and stuff by the end, you look here and be like, "You caught up them cops though, honey. Like you still got my back. We still does this."
This is like in Mass Effect where you do something and then like a prompt comes up where you're like, "Okay, what do you want to do next?" When Tory Lanez had this option, he picked the wrong answer, okay? So
he shot Meg Thee Stallion in the foot, allegedly. That's his answer was.
Yeah. And so
he makes a whole diss album like, "I didn't do it." And she's like, "I got the wound right here."
And so that whole situation basically made it to where Slim Jimmy went from having a low bond with a GPS monitoring device to no GPS monitoring device, but a $20,000 bond. And so,
God, fucking cops, man. Jesus.
Yeah. We'll follow that and see how that goes. But that mostly just seems like Slim Jimmy caught the only break he's caught since Ray Schremmerd. Anyways, Bob Dylan is pushing P, ladies and gentlemen. By that, I mean Bob Dylan is making goo gobs, potpourri, way too much money off of his back recordings. And so this is, this took a little bit of time for me to dissect because for folks who might remember, seasoned Audio Face listeners might remember that Bob Dylan actually sold his catalog to Universal Music Group maybe a year or 2 years ago. But as I'm clarifying from this CNN Business article, this isn't the only mega deal that Dylan has signed in recent years. In December 2020, he had sold his entire catalog of songs, which is separate from his recorded music rights and covers music and lyrics, to Universal Music Publishing Group. At that point, the agreement was considered a major shift for the singer-songwriter who had controlled much of his own intellectual property. So what Dylan did in 2020 was selling his catalog of songs, whereas what Bob Dylan is doing right now is selling the rights to music covers and song lyrics, essentially. And so Universal Music Publishing will have one aspect of that, and then Sony Music Publishing will have the latter aspect that I just described. If you'd like to know the dollar amounts, because I certainly do, the company didn't disclose the price of the deal, at least the Bob Dylan Sony one, but Billboard magazine estimates that those recordings are worth about $200 million. And the and the deal from Universal was estimated to be around $300 million. So that's half a bill off of his old music. You know, estimated, a lot of these figures I've found from being on the inside are often very overblown. But I mean, you know, even after basically non-existent taxes in the United States, there's a really nice chunk of change for an artist to be making off of their old music, way more than you'd be making from streaming alone.
Yeah, man, that's Jesus Christ, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of damn money.
Yeah, absolutely. Great for Bob Dylan in that, like I said, because that is not common for artists to be doing, and maybe that is paving the way for something more artists should be doing. But we move on to our last record of the week. We have Me Versus Me by NLE Choppa. It is a mixtape or an album or an EP. I don't know. It's 16 songs, 53 minutes too long. And I don't know with NLE Choppa. He releases a lot of things. Some of these things I kind of like from time to time. But he is in this genre of rapper similar to Youngboy NBA, who is... you know, has their one kind of like yelly thing that they do constantly, but ultimately is lacking a lot of stuff that separates them from like any other random, any given trap artist, right? Like you get your regular lyrics about rapping and gunplay and like hoes and all this other stuff, but like I don't see a lot of difference. I don't see a lot of growth or like really anything from what NLE Choppa is doing. It's just like basic ignorant shit, honestly.
Yep. It's okay. It's just drowned out. There's a lot. Like, you have some features on here that are okay. Push It with Young Thug, because now everybody's pushing P or some shit, or pushing something, apparently. Push it. Push it. To the limit, can't stop, I ain't pussy. Push it. Push it. Big dog like OG took it. Push it. Push it. Come to murder, I'm a bet to a rookie. Push it. Push it. I'm the same nigga when you not looking. Yeah, I put baguettes on her pussy. She ain't gotta do shit. Woo! I let her push my dick in at the top floor of Tussie's. I'm pushing pimp, but most of these niggas pushing pussy. If he on the top of you and trying to squish you, nigga, keep on pushing. Ready, say go on the man with the pussy.
Whatever that means. Gunna doesn't even know what it means. But it's okay. It's just, we've heard this album 1,000 times, is the thing. Like, it's nothing special. I mean, when we reviewed From Dark to Light, I actually liked that record. I thought it was decent. I thought it was a step in the right direction that way. But after that, now with this, it says an EP, but it's definitely way too long for an EP. And it's way too long for an LP anyways. Make your shit shorter, please, God. It's just not that great. It's like, I've heard this album 1,000 times. Yeah, it's just not that good, I don't think. Like, you have a couple of features that are all right. You have Young Thug, Polo G, you have Moneybagg Yo, G Herbo. They're okay. They do their work. But the production of it, it's just a trap sound that we've heard for a decade now at this point, where, you know, 5 years ago, sure, this record would have been okay. 4 years ago, even, sure, this record would have been okay. But now it's like trap has evolved in a way to where there's a lot more experimentation and you have good records. My prime example always is going to be Metro Boomin and 21, their collaboration efforts, and even just their singles and their the way their production is, and the way like 21, even his features are, they're always good. They're always fun. They'll always go harder. Like, they're very convincing in that way. But with this, it's drowned out. There's no, the production isn't anything great. So it's very disappointing.
Yeah, it's too. Your point that you made earlier about this being like the Gunna record, where like Gunna had a Young Thug feature. It's like every trap record is so cookie cutter that, oh no, the second song or third song is going to be your Young Thug track, and then you're going to have a couple features here, and then you'll do your like onslaught of supposed hood bangers that are really just not at all inspiring. Somewhere in there, you do your little Drake attempt where you try to be a little trap and B artist, and you try to do your singing. It usually doesn't do well. Then, thankfully, relentlessly, you get some other features to carry you through to the end of your lackluster album. And I tried to listen to this twice and didn't make it through either time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, yeah. And yeah, it's just... honestly, you could skip it. Like, you don't really need to listen to this record that much. You're not going to miss anything. There's nothing in here that is... there's no real bangers either. And that was my big thing, because with NLE Choppa albums, every once in a while you'll get a banger here or there. You'll get something where it's like, oh, this is fun to listen to. But this is just... it's so bland and dry throughout it. It's just like, all right, I don't... like, what am I doing? I listened to 1.5 and I was like, this is over. Like, I don't need it more than that.
compare the other two records that we did this today that were, they had a lot of substance. This just doesn't have that substance. And I think that's an issue with trap. And you've brought this up many times towards, you know, second half of last year and beginning of this year, where you're saying we're going to spend as little time on trap as we can, especially if they're bland. If they're bland like this, like, we'll do our best as music reviewers and stuff to get it to the masses. But we've heard this album. Like, we heard this album last week with NBA Youngboy. Same damn thing.
Yeah. For the record, though, why be better in this case? That's basically just how I'm going to...
why be better? Yes.
That's just how I'm going to review trap albums that I barely cared about anymore. It's just going to be, okay, well, is YB better than this, or is YB not better than this? In this case, YB's better. So...
YB better.
I almost wish that were the arbitrary scale, but instead we're going to do something even more obviously co-opted by white people, and that is the Floydies NFTs.
This is the Chinese Floydies, where they said, we at Floydies NFT HQ are disgusted by the racist comments that Jimmy Kimmel made on his program against Asian people. To celebrate the Asian community, we would decide to put this Asian Floydie up for sale. And it's the most racist looking image of an NFT you can ever see. And it is beautiful. And I think this album can deserve that. Do with that what you will.
Wow, the things that I were about to say would have gotten us another strike on YouTube. I stopped myself. Amazing. I wouldn't have been able to edit it out, and it would have gotten us a strike on YouTube. We're done.
Amazing.
That's bad. That image is bad. That's all I'm going
that's
to
bad.
Say.
It's really, really, really bad.
Quick hits. Speaking of Bob Dylan making $500 million off of his old recorded music, a man steals $6,500 Gibson Les Paul by stuffing it down his pants.
How do you fit a fucking Les Paul down your pants? I own a Les Paul, and that guitar is heavy as hell. It's solid wood. Like, it is solid. It's heavy. It's actually why I prefer my Telecasters. It's a little bit lighter, and I like the sound of Telecasters, but more on that one day whenever. You know, side note, we need to do a review of like our instruments and stuff that we like to play ourselves, actually, one day. I think that would be fun.
That'd be cool members content.
I think that'd be really cool members content. Also, I just want to show off my 1992 Telecaster Plus. But anyways. But
also, Sean, is that your $6,500 Gibson Custom Shop 60th Anniversary 59 Les Paul Standard Guitar, or are you just happy to see me?
You know, I don't see you that much anymore. No joke. How the hell do you fit it? But the best part of it all, he's wearing a Toronto Maple Leafs hat. Oh, Leafs go. Go, Leafs go. So you
so
know
that's
that,
why he
you
got caught.
So that's why he got caught, and that's why you know that Les Paul isn't gonna make it through the first round of the playoffs. Moving on.
Is that like the Groundhog Day, like, concept for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Haven't gone through the first round in like 20 years, so it's tradition at this point.
If a random degen is unable to steal merchandise while wearing Toronto Maple Leafs gear, then they're doomed to not win.
Then they're doomed. Yes,
that's
degen
awesome.
From uptown.
In other news, Cardi B just absolutely rocked a YouTuber who just like was going off a couple years ago with these hugely defamatory statements about Cardi B. Tasha K, who's the real tuber, her real name is Latasha KB, and her company are basically facing $4 million in penalties because...
Damn.
Cardi B sued her in 2019 because KB had posted dozens of videos claiming all these salacious things about the rapper, claiming that Cardi B had, quote, fucked herself with beer bottles on fucking stripper stages, she had contracted herpes, that she had been a prostitute, had cheated on her husband, and had done drugs, like all these other wild, salacious things. Cardi B testified that she felt suicidal in the wake of these videos because, yeah, people were just like believing these baseless things. And like in the situation, KB didn't have any like background sourcing or knowledge or information. She was just relentlessly posting these videos. And so there are situations where people allege that they've been defamed and it's baseless because there is evidence about that. And there are situations where people claim they're defamed because there isn't evidence. And that's what happens here because KB just absolutely got rocked. Not only was it $1.25 million in general damages, but there's additional damages like paying legal fees as well as reputational harm. and medical costs. Someone get me one of those rapper lawyers, man. And lastly...
Right? 50 mil.
Lastly, Sean, want to take the reel on this? Are you going to force me?
So Joey Badass doesn't want to jizz during sex because it preserves his life force. And in quotes, when a man ejaculates, there's a lot of things that leave your body. And that's the podcast, folks.
So there's actually a lot of people, rappers especially, who have spent too much time on Reddit, are actually, I believe, this theory that, when a man ejaculates, quoting Dr. Joey Badass, look that up, Jamie. I would rather preserve my life force. When a man ejaculates, there's a lot of things that leave your body. There's blood cells, there's testosterone, there's energy. You know, you get depleted. They say it's like an equivalent to running 20 miles when you bust a nut. Sean, as the resident athlete on the podcast, would you...
As the resident man who runs marathons and half marathons, is retired but still does them, that is not running 20 miles. I want Joey Badass to run 20 miles and see what he says. Just right now, though. Just right now. Cole, I mean, no training. Go. Have fun. Go.
I mean,
you
like...
You got 3 hours. I'll give you 3 hours to do it. Go. Have fun. See what happens.
The average American male probably expends the type of energy you do running to the end of the block during sex. So, like, I'm not sure that 20 miles is, like, the exact accurate thing. This is the part of YouTube, this is definitely disinformation. There's no proof for this, like, whatsoever. And for the record, Joey Badass has a kid. I was thinking Boosie Badass, no relation.
Yourself badass and stop putting my baby in your name. This has been Audio Face. What does it mean to play us out?
This has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. If you want more Audio Face, check us out at syndicate23.co, where you are able to get new reviews that we're doing first. Sometimes we do bonus reviews at the end of different weeks when we have more albums than we have to really count and do to review. And we'll post those for members first. You can get that at syndicate23.co, and you can help support Audio Face as well. I'm getting other things set up, like a community and a Discord channel and all the other different things. So make sure you're following us there. Make sure you're following us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter or Instagram. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram and TikTok at Dan from the Internet. Thank you very much for listening. It is going to be a very exciting February as we're like really getting our gears going, so to speak, into the entire year. Lots of fun plans, things we're planning in the background for the podcast, like guest interviews, special bonus episodes. Ooh, the bonus episodes are going to be really exciting. And more. So make sure you don't miss any of that. We'll talk to you very soon. Cheers.
Bye. Yes, I did get that wonder victory for people that are wondering.
What?
Age of Empires 4. I literally let that game play in the background. I totally forget to check on it. So I went right now. I was like, oh shit, good. I did win. Then my keeps do the battling for me. It worked.